from Anshe Sfar Beth El Emeth Congregation, it's time to take 10 Minutes for Torah with Rabbi Joel Finkelstein.
Welcome to our discussion of Parashat Ki Tetzeh, the rationale for the mitzvot. We know that the Sefer HaChinuch, some anonymous book written about the 613 mitzvot, based very much on the writings of the Rambam and the Ramban, some rabbi in Spain, 1300 or so, wrote a book called the Sefer HaChinuch, the Book of Education, and there, directing the book to his son, explained the 613 mitzvot. But what's unusual about his book is that he has Mishor Sheha Mitzvah. He always explains the root of the mitzvah. He tries, based on the Rambam's ideals, but sometimes differing from the Rambam, tries to give rationale for every single mitzvah. There are 74 mitzvot in Parashat Ki Tetzeh. We're not going to be able to discuss all that, but let's take a look at some of the very interesting mitzvot and shorashim, a root to the mitzvah that the Sefer HaChinuch discusses. Number one, we're never allowed to marry a Moabite or an Ammonite. We can marry the woman, as we know from the Book of Ruth, but the men can never be married. Now, it's strange because, in contrast, you can marry an Egyptian after the third generation. You can marry the Esav people after three generations. So, I don't understand. The Egyptians were so bad for us for 210 years, 400 years, 100 years. They were slave masters. And yet, you can eventually marry them. And the Moabites, once they came out, they were passing through the desert. They should have given us water and bread, or at least sold it to us. And they didn't. So, this is so terrible. So he says, we see from here an important principle. And that is that some things are so bad that even just doing it once could be worse than something that's done many times for a long period of time. Apparently, this sort of kilut, this stinginess that the Moabite men had is so deep that, it cannot be repaired. And therefore, we should never associate with the men of Ammon and Moab, people from Transjordan of that particular time. Interesting. Then he says, what about the Egyptians? He says, well, you know, it was God's will that the Egyptians oppress us. So you really can't blame them so much. Generally, we say that Egyptians also, you have to remember that Geraita Bartso, it says in the Torah that after all, you were a stranger in their own land. So How can you hate an Egyptian who you were a stranger? They didn't allow you to live in their land. You know, we have to remember that Jews lived in Germany and Poland and Russia for so many centuries. So we do have some gratitude for that, strangely enough. Whether Germans, maybe a different story, but the notion of gratitude for the good years is a value in this scenario. As the Torah goes on to the various other mitzvot, speaks about that you have to have two mitzvot relating to cleanliness. Number one, there needs to be a latrine. There needs to be, if you're out in battle, you can't just defecate all over the place. There has to be a latrine, a designated place. Number two, there needs to be a shovel that's either attached to your weapon or next to your weapon. You've got to be able to cover the excrement. And therefore, your camp should be holy. How is this holiness? I mean, it's not disgusting, but how is it holy? So some would say, well, you know, God is there in the camp of Israel and can't have dirty things. But he says, no, it's more than that. It's a famous idea of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf, that what? That in the kiyus mevil de kedusha, that eventually cleanliness is the beginning of holiness. And therefore, that's why it says you should be holy, because this cleanliness eventually leads to holiness. Torah says that we shouldn't let a slave go back to his master. Now, it's not clear, is it talking about a Jewish slave who ran away from outside of Israel and now comes to Israel for refuge, and we want to honor Israel, as Ibn Ezra says, show that it's a place of refuge. Is it a place the other way around, that he's completely, you did a war, made a war, there was a Gentile who belonged to a Gentile who was a slave, and you bring him back. So Zevrachinuch says, look, you know why we want this? Because we want Jews to know that the land of Israel is a holy place. It's an honored place. And you go to Israel, you get out of slavery, you are freed. And it says you should not, lotonenu, that when you take that slave in, don't afflict him. So he says a fascinating thing, which is fascinating from the point of view of the days when they had slaves. You would think that they would think that the persona non grata. Comes the Sefer HaChinuch, he says, no, the Torah tells us not to afflict a Jew, and not to afflict the more underprivileged stranger who has no family. And even more underprivileged is the slave, because he's chalush hanefesh, yoter chalush hanefesh, he's even weaker of spirit, nivzeh, he's treated even more poorly than the stranger. So we have to have special sensitivity to those who are the most vulnerable. Fascinating statement from those who live in the era where there still was slavery. The Torah goes on, so many different mitzvot. And when we turn to a different section of the Parsha, it talks about marriage and divorce. So you say, well, why is divorce important? A lot of people today say, well, you know, it's a consensual thing. If you're married, you're married. If you're not married, you're not married. So what do we need a piece of paper to get for? He says, well, there are several reasons. Number one, if you just say, look, honey, it's over, we're not married anymore. And she says, okay, fine, we'll separate. And then she goes and sleeps with someone. And then he says, well, she committed adultery. And then she says, no, but you said we were separated. He said, no, I didn't mean it. I didn't say it. You didn't hear me right. So therefore, when it's written, it's more clear. Also, we don't want to make divorce too easy. No-fault divorce. So we say, look, you have to at least write it. So therefore, perhaps someone, until they get a chance to hire the scribe and write it and all that and give it to her, they'll change their mind. Hopefully, we'll keep a marriage, hopefully worthy of keeping together, we'll keep it together. The Torah says that a groom should not leave his family the first year. Even for the war, he should stay home. And he explains that the Torah wants there to be married couples. It wants there to be families that make up society. And if a man gets the image of a woman in his head, he says, oh, this woman, he gets used to her. You tend to like that which you know. And everyone else would seem strange. This woman, she wears a different perfume, a different makeup, a different lipstick. Who needs her? He's only interested in his wife. This will strengthen the bonds of marriage. My son Asher pointed out, Rosenzweig, and Chutin, thank God, that actually this mitzvah, according to the Smak, is not just a mitzvah to make your wife rejoice for 1 year, but it's a reflection of the obligation to make your wife rejoice in general. And therefore, the Smak says it's a mitzvah to make your wife rejoice, period, in general. As my son Asher says, he plans to be very machmir, very strict about this particular law. The Torah goes on, and at the end of the parsha, talks about that if you take a loan, and then you're afraid you need an assurance, you take something from them, you should make sure it's not something that they need. Because after all, God cares about his people, he cares about the Jews, cares about his creatures, and he wants us to learn kindness. So with the Sefer HaChinuch, there are always two elements. One, the Ramban talks about it too, one is that the beneficiary of the mitzvah, the poor person, doesn't lose his grinding mill, because that's how he makes a living, grindstone. But also, the person who gives him back his grindstone, doesn't take the grindstone, is trained to be more kind. And it's the same reason we need to pay wages on time, both, because Elavon Hussein Nafsho, I mean, poor guy, he climbs up in the ladder, he risks his health, he comes to work when he's half sick, because he wants to make a few dollars of the minimum wage, whatever it is. And so you should certainly give him the wage on time, but also he wants to teach us Chemla and Chesed wants to teach us righteousness and mercy, and we need to take care of those who work for us. And there's an idea that someone who's a close relative should not be a witness. Parents can't be witnesses for children, and vice versa. Why not? So he says an interesting thing. He says, well, firstly, we have to have a proper judicial system, and we can't have people, making up things to protect or even to prosecute relatives. He says, also, we know that unfortunately, relatives tend to be neighbors, and they tend to fight a lot. And therefore, maybe if you'll believe all evil witnesses, people will concoct all sorts of false witnessing so to get after their relatives, and we don't want that happening. So that's why we can't have relatives as witnesses, not for the positive and not for the negative. The simile with many of these mitzvot of having mercy on the widow, leaving some place in our field for the poor, again, it's for the poor, it's for the widow. And also, so the person leaving the share for the crops, for the poor, those who don't take something from the widow, they will themselves learn the ideas of kindness and mercy. Then there's a strange mitzvah that it's hard for us to relate to today. We're not used to corporal punishment in these Western countries. But there was an idea that we give lashes to a sinner. A person does a sin, and most of us would probably qualify. You give them lashes. And then there have to be certain circumstances. You have to read the tractate of Makot to know when you get lashes, don't get lashes. But why would you get lashes? So he says a beautiful thing. He says, well, we know that the Jews, a couple of weeks ago, Parshat Re'eh, we read that the Jews are banim makom, banim atem hashem lechem, we're children to God. We know when it comes to children, yaser bincha, we know you try to afflict, try to chastise your child so they'll do the right thing. Today we don't believe in corporal punishment, but the idea is that you want to encourage your children, whatever sort of way, to do the right thing. And that's why he gave us lashes, but the rabbis say, you have to evaluate. It's an old man. Can't take so many. Can't take 39 lashes. So you have to have less. And if you see in the middle of the lashes that it's no good, you have to be careful, because this is not done in a punitive kind of way. It's done in an instructive way, like a parent trying to help the children. The Torah also says not to muzzle an animal while it's threshing, while it's sitting right there with all the wheat. It's hungry. So he says, again, we want to train our souls to be kind. And even though the animals, and this is a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban, I believe the Rambam says that the creatures, since there is such a thing as an animal, it must have its own purpose. The Ramban says, no, they're just for our purposes. So he agrees, they're just for our purposes. The whole purpose of an animal is really for me. But still, we should get used to being good, even to the animal, because this is the appropriate thing for a holy nation, and just to get us used to the idea of chemla, of mercy on other creatures. The Torah then goes on to say that there's a mitzvah of yibum, that we should, if God forbid a brother dies and he has no children, you should marry his widow. Why is that? It shows the deep connection of a wife and husband. We know from Adam and Eve, says the Sefer HaChinuch, that the wife is part of the husband. Again, don't get carried away with this. A woman also has her own image of God. She's her own person. But to some degree, there is a mystical thing that the wife becomes part of your family. I mean, how is that true? She doesn't have the same father. She doesn't have the same mother. But we consider our wives, husbands, we consider them related to us. How is that? Because there's a physical relationship, and because somehow they're part of us. So when the husband dies, the only thing left from that husband is that widow. Many people who've lost their children, they experience that the only thing left is to hang on to that widow. That widow somehow is part of that husband. So if a widow would have a child, And it would be, you know, not some stranger who wants to take the child away from the original husband, but someone who tries to carry on the memory of the husband. Then there's a continuity. And of course, God wants everyone to have a continuity, to have, to bring more people into this world. So that makes a lot of sense. So it gives other Kabbalistic reasons as well, but will suffice for now. These are some of the explanations Sefer HaChinuch, this mysterious author, gives. Maybe it was the Ra'ah. Maybe he's one of the commentaries known as the Ra'ah. That he gives to so many different mitzvot. This week is a wonderful opportunity to look at 74 different mitzvot in the Torah. 27 positive, 47 negative. And to try to understand what is their rationale. Yes, we believe there are chukim, mishpatim, but some say that even those mitzvot that are supposedly irrational, it just takes more work to figure out what they are. But actually, all the mitzvot have a rationale. God is a rational being, and as such, the Torah is, by definition, whatever the Torah says, it is rational. It makes sense. It builds our character. And these are some of the rationales for some of the important mitzvot in our parsha. Thanks for joining us here at the Anshei Sefar B'Hillel with the congregation for a discussion of the parsha and the various holidays. Join us each week for a discussion of the parsha and the holidays. And thanks to Jason Lefkowitz, our producer. Thank you.
This has been 10 Minutes for Torah with Rabbi Joel Finkelstein. To learn more, visit asby.org.